Hello and welcome back to The Salvatore Show. Today I have a special podcast interview with Member of Parliament for Leeds North West, Alex Sobel, MP. I'll be asking him questions on anti-Semitism in the UK, following on from my participation in the Holocaust Educational Trust's Anti-Semitism in the UK course.
Thank you for joining me. My first question I have is, as the Vice Chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Anti-Semitism, what does your role entail? And can you tell the listeners what work the group does?
So the group really is about highlighting the level of anti-Semitism in the UK and also undertaking work around what's being done on anti-Semitism. So for instance, we have 3 or 4 times a year we have a visit for parliamentarians, MPs and peers to visit organisations such as Jewish schools, Community Security Trust, synagogues, JW3, which is a Jewish community centre in North London, Finchley Road, etc., to highlight both the level of anti-Semitism, how it affects people, and what work's being done around it. We also undertake inquiries. So the most recent inquiry I was involved with, and our most recent inquiry, was about anti-Semitism in higher education, particularly on university campuses. And we publish a report on that, which people can read. So we look at particular instances and particular types of anti-Semitism in particular places as well.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And you just mentioned the Community Security Trust, but according to the Trust, last year, 1,652 anti-Jewish hate incidents were recorded nationwide. This is the 5th highest annual total ever reported to the CST. In recent years, what has been the cause of such a high amount of hate incidents?
I think, one, there's been an increased level of reporting. And also, as you can imagine, we've had a huge increase in online anti-Semitism. So it's given forums for anti-Semites to expound their views. But the other thing that we generally find is, and this is, you know, and this is a point you can sometimes debate, that when things become difficult in Israel, where there are flashpoints, and a lot of diaspora don't necessarily agree with the Israeli government on those issues, then that heightens the level of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish hatred and attacks. So, you know, in recent years, we've obviously just had a particularly right-wing government elected in Israel, probably the most right-wing government that's ever been elected in the state of Israel, where now ministers in that government have made very strongly, and I think there's no point pretending otherwise, strongly anti-Palestinian statements and are trying to enact anti-Palestinian policy. And we've had, you know, issues like Sheikh Jarrah and others, which are widely known in the UK, and that has raised the temperature. But I think actually more broadly in society, that's not the only cause. There are a number of other underlying issues that unfortunately mean that Jewish people are seeing a rise in hatred towards them.
Thank you. And what more do you think the government or local authorities can do to combat this rise in anti-Jewish hate incidents?
I think that local authorities, where there are large Jewish populations, are really good. I mean, in Leeds City Council does a really good job of working with the Leeds Jewish Representative Council. I understand it's the same in places like Manchester, and Liverpool and Bury Council and in councils in North London where there are large Jewish communities. So the local authorities, it's a more general point, obviously, are very resource denied. So it's really about how they work with local communal organisations, Representative Council and Community Security Trust. But they're doing their best. In terms of legislation, I think actually some of the, you know, so we had the inquiry on anti-Semitism on campus. And this is maybe a controversial view, I think that the recent legislation on free speech on university campuses is a retrograde step for Jewish people, because, for instance, it makes, you know, I fought when I was a student, and lots of other people in the Jewish Society did at Leeds, to retain a no platform policy when two well-known fascists, Mark Collett, who's still a well-known fascist, who runs Patriotic Alliance now, and Chris Beverley, tried to overturn it, and that was a long time ago. So actually, a no platform policy, no platform to fascists and other people with extreme racist views, protects Jewish people. And the government, through their, I don't know, support for an extreme version, I'd say, of freedom of speech, which doesn't actually create protections for minorities. It's just like a sort of libertarian view of free speech, which is a valid political position, but not one I agree with, means that we have less protection for Jewish students on campus.
Absolutely. Thank you. And as we've mentioned, these hate incidents have also appeared online. And in 2020, yourself and Andrew Percy joined a coalition of parliamentarians from the UK, the US, Israel, Australia and Canada to launch a task force to combat online anti-Semitism. Can you tell the listeners what work this group has been doing or has done, and explain how hard it is to combat online anti-Semitism and what can be done to counter it?
So actually, we've now added members to the international panel from Europe as well. And our next session is next week in Brussels, which I'm hopefully gonna attend. So we've actually got big coverage. I think where Jewish communities are around the world, Europe, the UK, the US, Canada, Australia, Israel, that covers, you know, a large part of it. And, you know, actually the other places with lots of Jewish community, places like Ukraine, and we hope they're going to come on board. Obviously, they've got other pressing issues at the moment. But again, minority rights are really important for the Ukrainian government, Ukrainian parliament. So we hope to welcome them in time as well. And actually, I think that there's a number of things there that actually are mixed up in those sort of geopolitical and global issues. So this is a bit of a hobby horse of mine. In one European country, we have very significant members of the Jewish community, of their diaspora, who are hate figures. And it creates a huge amount of anti-Semitism in that country and are used as a political football for the leader of the country to get re-elected. And it's very reminiscent of what has happened over time. Yes. That, you know, the Jewish community is a political football, the other, you know, a fifth column, etc., and are used for extremists to get elected. And I think once more, this is sadly happening in modern day Europe. So that's what, and actually there's a misinformation, disinformation role. And we're seeing some of that actually being pumped out by Moscow and the Putin administration as well, in terms of online anti-Semitic tropes and narratives. So there is geopolitics mixed up there. But actually more broadly, the work of the panel has been looking at more mainstream providers and how they can stop anti-Semitism. So, you know, they're the sort of providers we talk about all the time. Twitter, obviously, have gone backwards recently. Facebook, TikTok, etc. So those are the main issues we have. And we've engaged with people from right across all the countries that I named and the EU, in terms of experts and organisations there, to look at ways we can look at having tightened legislation. So actually, they're really interested. The other countries are really interested in the online safety bill, which is currently going through Parliament, and actually want the detail of its model in their own countries. And actually, we then come in and talk about maybe ways that can be strengthened and some of the demerits of that bill. And me and Andrew might not exactly have the same views, but we have the same thrust. And that helps them, because they're legislators in their own countries, and they are trying to lobby to have legislation on online safety. So, you know, the government say it's world leading. That is true, but you also want to future proof it. And world leading, when there isn't much in the rest of the world, isn't that much of a boast. So, especially when all the other countries are looking at you for leadership. So we've got a real role there, and it is really valuable. Some people don't see the value in legislators from different countries sharing best practice, but I think in many areas, it is so vital and valuable and improves Absolutely. What's happening in your own country. And actually, in this case, it might not benefit the UK hugely, but it probably will benefit the EU, the US, Canada, Australia, etc.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that is part of our role as well.
Absolutely. And the second part to that is, what, you know, advice or tips would you give to combat online anti-Semitism? So if somebody encounters it, for example, on Twitter or another platform like that?
I mean, always report. I mean, you know, quite often, I mean, I'll give an example actually of how I've been a victim of this in the past. So quite early on in my parliamentary career, I spoke on the Holocaust Memorial Day speech, and Channel 4 put the speech on their Facebook page with so much anti-Semitic hatred on it. And then there was a whole thing about whose responsibility it was to police the cop. Channel 4 denied it was their responsibility. Facebook denied it was their responsibility. And we went to, you know, senior people in public affairs in the UK. I mean, Channel 4 is just UK, but Facebook is global, about this. And it just showed the problem. And that's why, you know, I think that actually there's publisher responsibility. And this is why we need the online safety bill, a very strong online safety bill. More recently, I, and people misunderstood the point I was trying to make on Twitter, but I spoke out against the fact that venues were hosting Roger Waters. And my view is that Roger Waters, and it's actually continued to prove to be right, is clearly not just a critic of the Israeli government, which I do not have a problem with, but also is it clearly anti-Semitic. And Dave Gilmour, another member of Pink Floyd, backed up this point. And also, and just as importantly, I have to say, was pushing out pro-Putin propaganda on Ukraine, which actually for me currently is just, you know, people shouldn't be giving platforms, shouldn't be giving venues. We just hosted Ukraine's Eurovision, and then, you know, venue just down the road, host Roger Waters. So people thought I was trying to get the government to ban Roger Waters, which is not what I was trying to do. I was trying to say to the venues, as I have for years with anti-Semites and fascists and others, that the venue shouldn't host that artist. And it's up to the venue where they host them, not the venues did, probably because they're commercial interests. What I was asking was for them not to. It was a request. Not, I wasn't trying to, I'm not saying, I don't believe that we should legislate against venues and say who they can and who they cannot host, but venues themselves can make decisions. So that was where I was, that's what I was going with. But coming around to the point, I got quite a lot of anti-Semitic abuse. You know, people saying I got my orders from the Israeli government. Anybody who listens to me, my comments, the Israeli government would know such a nonsense. And, you know, the embassy and all of that. You know, the typical stuff that you get, you know, if you stand up for these things. And again, Twitter did absolutely nothing. I muted the people putting stuff out. That's basically the best I can hope for in the current ownership model of Twitter, which is why we need legislation.
Absolutely, yeah. No, and I'm sorry that you've had to deal with that. And also, as we've touched on, you know, yourself being Jewish and in the public eye as an MP, you also led the debate on the Polish anti-defamation law in 2018. Could you talk about, you know, some of the abuse that you faced from that and how you personally dealt with it?
I think that there's a misunderstanding. I mean, one, there was definitely the Polish far right who definitely didn't misunderstand. But there's a misunderstanding generally about the objection. So the law would have effectively whitewashed any Polish involvement in the Holocaust. Now, the vast majority of the Polish population, which we have to remember was under occupation of Nazis and suffered hugely, did not support the Holocaust or sending Jews to extermination camps, ghettos, etc. But there were a small minority of Poles that collaborated. And this law would have effectively outlawed anybody in Poland making those points. And I think that is, again, you know, talking about freedom of speech, that's sort of the extreme opposite of trying to curtail freedom of speech and revisionism of history. I really cannot abide revisionism of history. And so we had the debate. We've got one MP of Polish descent, who in fact chairs the Polish group here who very strongly had an opposing view, and we agree to differ on this. But most of the people in that debate were supportive of my position. Actually, the partly through the internal Polish democratic institutions, and partly because of the pressure of international, that law didn't proceed. But we need to be, you know, it's still the same government in Poland. We need to be vigilant about this. And we can't really have any revisionism of history of what happened in the Holocaust.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree as well. And stuff like this is also happening in Hungary as well right now. So, so it's worrying. How important is it to have a new National Holocaust Memorial and Learning Centre built in the UK and right at the heart of democracy as well? What kind of message does that send out?
I think we do have a lot of institutions just to reflect that, and who do great work. I just went to Northern Holocaust Education Centre, which is based at the University of Huddersfield, which is based around testimony, including one of my constituents, but of Holocaust survivors from the north of England, mainly, who came on the kinder transport, but not solely. Yes, yeah. Some of them went through the camps. We have great organisations like the Holocaust Educational Trust and Holocaust Memorial Trust and others who do absolutely brilliant work. But reflecting my experience as an MP, lots of school groups come to Westminster and spend half a day in Parliament doing parliamentary things. Those same schools do Holocaust education, and then having a centre literally abutting the Parliamentary Education Centre. It would literally, it's just on the other side of the wall, round the corner, you know, if they had to go out of the estate. But it would mean that schools and other visitors to Parliament could go and visit that centre. And it would mean, if you think about where you're going to place somewhere like that, which would get the most footfall, then it is the most logical place to have it by Parliament, mm-hmm. because of where people's interests lie in both of those issues. So I do think it's really important. It is taking a long time. I understand why. There is some opposition. I have to say it's a bit NIMBYist. But I do think it's hugely important that we have the centre, and that the centre is where we've already identified it to be.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And the final question, a lot of young people and a lot of people in general would agree that a key way to combat future anti-Semitism is through educating young people. One charity in particular who does this is the Holocaust Educational Trust, which I'm a regional ambassador for. How important is the work the Trust does for young people and Holocaust education?
I think it is hugely important. I think the work that you do as regional ambassador, I think the work that HET do, taking young people on school visits physically to Auschwitz-Birkenau, you don't really, I've not been, I'm planning to go this summer actually. I was going to email Karen Pollock today about it, in fact, who's the CEO of the Holocaust Trust, who I coincidentally also went to university with. So she's another Leeds University graduate. We're all doing very well. But I think, you know, that it just brings the reality of it to young people, particularly those who aren't Jewish, who haven't been brought up with it, who it is just a part of their curriculum, how monstrous and brutal it was. And I think actually at the moment it's even more alive. I went to Ukraine in February, and I went to Babyn Yar, which is where hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian Jews were murdered. Literally, they're just shot in cold blood by the Nazis after being promised safe passage to Palestine. That's why Jews voluntarily went there. And there's a memorial there. And the guide just put a piece of metal in my hand, and I wasn't sure why. And he said, "This is from a Russian missile. It killed a family of six right here on the memorial." And so it's not just a piece of history.
Yeah.
You know, there's a genocidal attack going on today in the same place as the Holocaust happened.
Yeah.
You know, and with the same ideology behind it. You know, it's about erasure of nation, national identity, the war in Ukraine. You know, underlying, there's lots of other things going on, but underlying it. And so, you know, we need lessons of history that apply to today, and that is one. And so it's not just a bit of theory, but actually it's something where, and not just there, we can talk about lots of different places in the world, Sudan, the Uyghurs, Rohingya, the Yazidis, although not quite so much very right now with Yazidis, but very recently, where peoples are under genocidal attacks. And so it is a lesson from history that can be applied directly to them.
Thank you. And thank you for answering all of my questions as well. Really insightful. And I appreciate the time you've taken to allow me to ask you the questions as well. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. I hope I haven't embarrassed Karen.
No. She'll be very pleased. She'll be very pleased.